And it's time to talk a little cricket, and a huge part of the SEN cricket crew, but also the chief cricket writer for the Australians, Peter Lawler, no stranger to this station, and he joins us again. Pete, welcome back.
Good afternoon. Raining in Melbourne, is it?
Yes, you know the answer, Pete. It is pouring. It's been pouring for 2 days. But you know what? We got the test out the way a couple of weeks ago, so there's a win there.
Yeah, I just worry about Gerard Waitley. He's very, very anxious about Sydney weather, but he seems to cope away with the Melbourne weather.
Hey, you're the best journalist in the game. Have you spent the last 2 days trying to get to the actual bottom of this whole David Warner baggy grand situation? Because it seems to be the talking point.
I'm the oldest journalist in the game. I'm not the best. But I put way too much of my life into that stupid bloody story. Don't mind. And I reckon it was just that final pebble in the shoe, wasn't it? Just to remind us that, you know, there's that element of David Warner that can just drive you mad. And it was certainly, he did that to us on the way out with this one. Look, my malice, it was found in a storage shed where it should have been, where they'd checked before. Now, whose fault was it? I don't know. Warner seems to be blaming security. I don't think that sits all that well with security. Mm. But, yeah. Yep. What a little circus on the side with David Warner. But anyway.
Have you had a more ridiculous story in your career than finding a baggy green that really looked like just someone had a boy look?
It was right up there, wasn't it, for a final week story. I mean, you know, can you imagine I've lost my baggy green on the edge. You know, on the eve of my final test, all of Australia is watching. The Prime Minister gets involved and, oh, God, this is a bit awkward. It was there all the time. Yeah. No, one of the more ridiculous stories in cricket.
How did you see his farewell? He had a good knock in the first innings. And, look, it looked like he was going to hit the winning runs at one stage in that second innings. But Pakistan wanted to spoil the party. It was appeal after appeal in that innings there for him not being able to hit the winning runs.
Oh, look, I don't think David could complain in any way, or anybody could complain about the way that ended up. You know, to go out looking that good, that's fantastic. How few in any sport get to go out like actually batting well? Yeah, sure, it would have been nice to be there and score the winning runs. It didn't matter that much in the end. It mattered that David went out on his own terms, I reckon, because, you know, last summer he was done. He was absolutely done.
Player of the series, though.
Last summer?
Yeah, wasn't he?
Not in the Test series.
Yeah.
Depends which one you're talking about. But, you know, leading into the Test summer last year, he was hopeless. And he hadn't made a century for 2 years. And he pulled that one out of the hat, I thought, the double hundred. But he still didn't look right. But this summer, he just looked like a bat. He looked like David Warner of old. Mm. He looked like a good batter. And as I say, you know, to get to the end of 12, 13 years, 112 tests, and still be going that strong, I thought that was great. I also thought it was great the warmth with which he was received. And we saw a similar thing in Melbourne. It wasn't just, you know, Sydney people with an affection for the local boy. Melbourne gave him a very warm round of applause when he left the MCG for the last time as a batter. Mm-hmm. So on that level, I think it's nice. And that's, you know, people will never forgive David. Some people will never mm-hmm. forgive David for the sandpaper affair. They're more than willing to forgive the other two involved, or however many others were involved, but they'll never forgive David, and that's their lot. But for the rest of us who sort of believe that, you know, people can make mistakes and rehabilitate themselves, he's been impeccable, I think, since he's basically put his head down, shut his mouth, and just done his best to play cricket. And you've got to admire him for that. There hasn't been too much whinging. There hasn't been, you know, too much whining about how he's been treated. And I think the Australian public respects that and respects his contribution to cricket across such a long period. I mean, the fact it's so hard to replace him tells you just how important he's been.
Well, where does that sit in your mind, Pete? We'll have the announcement. Is it tomorrow or Wednesday the squad will be announced for the Adelaide Test? And we'll have no real... We'll have a bit of an indication, I guess, who might open, but we won't know until we actually get there. But where do you feel the winds are blowing currently for that particular nod?
Oh, you know, You're saying, have I ever spent more time on a ridiculous story? I mean, this topic around the openers is driving cricket writers mad. I've been on the phone to three different cricket writers today. Hey, what do you know? What do you think? Look, they play it pretty close to their chest. I want to see Cameron Green play in these next two tests. The gut feel around the group is that Cameron Green will play. That doesn't necessarily tell you who's going to open. But I'm also hearing that Marcus Harris is pretty close.
Yeah.
So I don't know which way it's going to go. I have no idea, frankly. Mm. I only have gut feels. And look, Marcus Harris would deserve a place in that side. You know, he's followed them around for a long time as 12th man or a bit part player, you know, and he scored his runs when he's needed to score runs. So he did very well in those tour games recently. So no one would begrudge Marcus Harris or Cameron Bancroft or Renshaw a place in that side. But, gee, that Cameron Green is just so bloody good. I want to see him playing test cricket somehow.
How do you think they should view it, right? Now, the West Indies are here. I know it's not going to be a... suggesting it's not an overly competitive series, but do they view it as the best team to put together for this particular series, or do they put it together looking to the future somewhat, knowing what's on the horizon next sort of 12 or 18 months, even 2 years, of course, India into England? How should, in your opinion, Cricket Australia look at this decision now?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And so much of the sort of knowledgeable argument is around building for the future, that you always have one eye to the future when you're picking a team, and one eye to the past, and you balance those sorts of things. Couple of factors feed into this. One, you play two tests against West Indies and two tests against New Zealand pretty soon afterwards, and that's it. No more tests for the rest of the year. They don't go anywhere to play test cricket. So the next test is back in Australia. Do you learn anything from those four tests that you don't know already? I'd say probably not, unless you're trying something funky. You know what you're going to get from Harris, Bancroft and Renshaw. They've all had a crack, more than one crack with most of them. You know what Cameron Green can do. But the other factor that I think comes into it is the way that this group selects the team, the way that McDonald and Bailey work. They're essentially conservative guys, but also they focus on the test match in front of them and nothing. I reckon they don't look much further ahead than that, ever. They just say, let's deal with this and then we'll deal with the next issue. And the World Test Championships made that important. You can't take your foot off the accelerator in cricket anymore. You can't afford to lose a test match at home or cruise in a test match. Not that I don't think Australia's ever been accused of that, but every test match is critical because we know we missed out a World Test Championship final by a few points over a run rate issue, let alone a win or a loss. Yeah. So I think that they have got their eyes on the short term, and I don't mind that.
So the state of Test cricket is up for discussion at the moment, and you see these nations. You look at South Africa and New Zealand the other day, for example. Is the World Test Championship, do you think that is going to keep people ticking along Test cricket? How are we going to make sure that stays at the forefront of this great game?
I think the World Test Championship's a good idea. And I think it's serving some purpose. I think there's some concerns in that it's in this current FTP, it's forcing nations to play two test series only. Mm-hmm. And CA are very hot on that. They don't believe this should happen. You need to pay more attention to test cricket. It's not going to save test cricket. Yeah. The World Test Championship in no way will save test cricket. It's essentially going to be a churn between the strong nations with, hopefully occasionally a New Zealand or a South Africa or a Pakistan putting their hand up. The only way you can save test cricket is if the countries who make the most money from test cricket and therefore should value it the highest put some of that money back in to other countries who struggle to play test cricket. You see, South Africa is so damn poor at the moment, it kind of, the economic rationalists are in charge and it's saying, no, we can't afford to send our best players away for a test series because we've got to stay at home and put on a circus to raise the money. Yeah. to keep the show going. Those situations shouldn't occur. Those situations can be helped by India in particular, but also Australia and England, the countries that make a lot of money from Test cricket, finding a fund, finding a way to subsidise cricket. People are talking about a set match payment. That goes some way. So that every player across the world gets the same amount of money to play. That would be good, sure. But you've got to help the administrators. You've got to go to South African cricket. Yeah, it's more than just players, who need that incentive. The administrations need that incentive too. But there's a pretty good administration at Cricket Australia at the moment. You don't hear me say that very often. When the cricket's not on, we're usually hunting the administrators. But this might be going all right. And they've resolved to sort of make this sort of the defining moment in their eras to a degree, or one of the defining challenges. And they are very focused on getting the ICC and getting other countries to look after Test cricket, to make it a viable form of the game for countries like South Africa and the West Indies and Pakistan. Because God knows, you can't just play England and India every couple of years. And look how close Pakistan are with all that they're up against. Mm-hmm. That was a good series. They're a competitive cricket team. They've got something there. They don't need much to provide some real excitement across a whole summer.
Well, you've neglected to say Bazball's actually what's going to save Test cricket.
Oh, hey, I love Bazball.
It's exciting. It was great.
Yeah, that turned my head too.
What about Elise Perry playing her 300th Australian international game in all formats? She's going to be one of, well, hands down, the best, I guess. What's the word I'm thinking of there in terms of where does she sit in Aussie cricket? Where do you think she sits, male or female?
Yeah, that's a great question, isn't it? And I was sitting there thinking that this morning, watching her play her 300th and thinking back to about 4 years ago when, you know, she was battling injury and missing some key games and not looking that good, and her bowling wasn't going very well, and people were starting to say, you know, Elise, she's come to the end of her career, but it's been a fantastic career. She's actually got better since then. Somehow she's found this new gear.
Is there a player that's adapted as well as her? She seemed to go from bowling to being a batter, back to bowling, back to being a batter. There's probably not a male cricketer that's probably done that.
No. That's why we get so excited about a Cam Green. If only a Cam Green, you know, it's in the hope that a Cam Green can be an Elise Perry, really. She's going to be one of our greatest players ever. Mm. There has to be no doubt about that. Certainly, you know, the greatest player the women's game has had. And you know, it's apples and oranges, isn't it? It's a bit hard to compare, but her achievements are extraordinary. And, you know, like we're fating Warner for what he's done across a long period. She has done it across such a long period, which is, that defines champions, doesn't it? To be doing it at the start, the middle and the end.
Yeah.
Superstar. Hey, before we let you go, Pete, I just want to roll back to next summer. I haven't looked at the whole Australian cricket schedule over the course of the year. You touched on the fact that after New Zealand, there's no test match cricket until the Indians get here in the Australian summer. We've got a T20 World Cup, so we know we're going to have some short form cricket. Is there a chance we're going to see all our test players start the Sheffield Shield season playing for their states?
Oh, God. That's a question without notice.
Yeah, I know it is. It's more of a glass half full type of thing about it. Sheffield Shield, it's an ongoing conversation, and we don't ever get to see. This is why Cricket Australia, I don't think, value runs as much in the Sheffield Shield as they used to, because they don't necessarily face a great deal of test calibre bowlers on a regular basis. But we have had it every now and then. I think towards the Indian series, I reckon about 10 years ago, we just all happened to be back, or they all happened to be back doing their thing. So I'm just going to put on the agenda now, Pete. There's an opportunity here, hopefully in the back end of 2024, that the Sheffield Shield competition can take a really big rise in what we traditionally have been seeing of recent times.
I'd love to see that. I love the traditional start to a summer when people are fighting for places in the team, and every Shield innings matters, and you get to go down to the Shield and watch it and sort of compare and contrast. It hasn't been so relevant the last few years, has it? Because this team's been so settled. And it's been hard. I mean, one people knock the three openers that are looking to come into the side for, you know, not necessarily the greatest of returns across the last 3 years, but Shield cricket's been tricky. Mm. The pitches have been pretty, have been quite wild the last 3 years. Yeah, a traditional start to the summer would be good, but do you reckon these old men like Pat Cummins and Mitch Stark and those are going to get out and bowl in Sheffield Shield cricket? That's... bowl too many balls in a Sheffield Shield cricket? I mean, every, I think there's a sort of sense now that every ball you bowl off Broadway is one you don't bowl on Broadway. I mean, God, we don't even have tour games anymore.
Mm. Look, maybe I'm too hopeful, but I would love to see Sheffield Shield have some type of relevance and prominence, because every time we talk about the new opener, the SEN family, and of course you're a huge part of it, so you would see the text machine. This is what Bancroft's doing. This is what Renshaw's doing. This is what Harrit, and it's all well and good, except the Cricket Australian selectors and the crew that make it up don't necessarily always look towards it, mainly because not everyone, in fact, honestly, our top 15 players don't traditionally play it.
No, you're right. I mean, I think it'd be wrong to say that they don't look at it. Mm-hmm. They do, and they factor and they take that information on board because, you know, that's first-class cricket. But they certainly look a lot at A-tours and, you know, prime ministers. They seem to put a lot of they invest a lot in that. But they are generally people that they've picked up because of their performances in the Shield. And as I say, the Shield hasn't been that relevant lately because there just haven't been any vacancies in the Australian cricket team.
True. Yeah. If you win, it's hard to make major moves if the team continues to win. A sum of all parts traditionally is the way you go. Pete, as always, what have you done for – you've had a couple of days off with some early tests finishing, mate. What have you been filling your time with?
Well, you just interrupted me. I'm reading a book on this. I hate to sound like a lunatic. The JFK assassination now. Yeah, I need to get my head out of cricket for a little while. So, I'm back. I'm in Dallas, Texas at the moment.
Are you a conspiracy theorist? Where do you sit on JFK in the unfortunate situation? Well, he's watching the doco.
I'm not a conspiracy. In fact, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. The book that I'm reading is Parkland. They based the movie on that. And this is complicated, but Parkland is an excerpt from a bigger book called Re-Prosecuting Kennedy or something like that, which is actually done by the prosecutor from the O.J. Simpson case.
Okay.
Where he prosecutes Lee Harvey Oswald and basically dismisses every single conspiracy theory in legal terms. So, no, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Right. Not yet, anyway.
Maybe by the end. Pete, appreciate your time as always. Looking forward to hearing more of you as we head towards the next test against the Windies.
Okay, take care. Good to chat.